Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard. I'm very excited because I have Jenny Pill with me on Zoom. Hey, Jenny.
Hello.
All right, so I'm just going to say, we're friends even though this is only the second time we've ever chatted. There's a very strange thing. I guess it was also partially COVID forcing everyone to use Zoom a lot. But Jenny made a film called Voice that was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. And I absolutely love that film. And because Jenny's based in the UK, we did a Q&A on Zoom. And I don't know, we must have chatted enough about your work. And actually, it was a group chat, right? We did a group chat with several of the contributors to your film, because Voice is seven dance artists around the world doing dance while they to their own voiceover of poetry they wrote. It's just a wonderful film. I love that film. And somehow we conversed just enough that you, when you decided to start your own dance film festival, you sent an email to me saying, hey, can you help out a little? And I said, anything you need. But I will stop. I will just shut up now. Oh, wait. So Voice will be in the Discover Indie Film TV series, season 7, that we have earmarked to release January 15th, 2023. So please do, after hearing this, go to Amazon Prime Video and type in Discover Indie Film. There will be 6 seasons available. And hopefully by the time you're hearing this, it'll say season 7 coming soon. And it'll even list the films. And I don't know, I don't even know if you can pre-purchase it or say, I'm interested in this. And I don't even know how Amazon works with things that are slated to release. But you should see Voice. If you're listening to this, if you're listening to my voice, you should see the film that Jenny Pill directed called Voice. And now I'm going to throw it over to you, Jenny. You've been smiling while I talk, but only I can see that because this is audio. So what is your personal story? Did dance come first? Did film come first? Were you always interested in the arts?
Well, for me, it was very much dance that came first. As soon as I could walk, I was dancing. So from a tiny age, and my parents put me into dance classes when I was 2 because I literally danced all the time. If I could dance instead of walking, I danced. So right from the start of my life, it's just been a passion for me my whole life. And there's been periods of time where I've tried to step away from it, but it's always come back and picked me up again. And it's my savior and it's my passion, and it makes me feel whole. So dance is definitely, for me, the main element. And film came a lot later. I'd say probably in my 20s, I studied. When I studied, it was a part of my studies, and it really caught my attention then. And I got really into it at college. And I made films at college and I loved it, and I got a camera, like a special video camera. It was before digital technology, and and made films when I could. And I think when everything became more digital, I found it quite intimidating. And then I don't think I made films for quite a few years. But now I think, now that we talked about this before, actually, now that cell phones are so good, it makes it a lot less intimidating that you can make a film on a cell phone and it be top-notch quality. So yeah, that's a very brief sort of.
It is a brief. So I will ask questions now to dive in, because you don't have the ego to tell your whole life story for half an hour without prodding. So what kind of dance, as by the way, you must have, amazing that even at the age of 2, you were showing promise, because yeah, I've, but it's kids, like 2-year-olds are very rarely coordinated. But there was something there that was recognizable.
Yeah, I think it was, especially with music. Anytime there was, my parents are big classical music fans, and anytime there was music, I would just be away with the fairies and expressing it through my body and moving. And so very much, yeah, expression, always expression. And but then I don't think I was that coordinated. My mum tells me that she was in stitches watching me trying to learn how to skip, and I was just hopping around the room on one leg. So I think it took a while for
took a while,
the coordination
but
just kick in. Yeah.
But and as you were growing up through school, was there types of dance that appealed to you most? Like, did you? I guess I'm fishing for what genre, if it was ballet or something else.
Yeah, I think, well, it was the usual what we have in the UK, which is ballet, tap and modern. Those were the three when I was young that everybody did. So I did those. And then on top of that, there was some song and dance, some improvisation, which I really enjoyed actually. What else? Those are the main things. And I loved ballet. I wanted to be a ballerina. I as a little girl, that was all I wanted. Like so many other little girls, really, with my tutus. And but it was never going to be. I don't have a ballerina's physique, or you know, it's so specific what you need to be a ballerina, and I didn't have that. But I was very good at modern, but it wasn't where my heart was when I was little. And it wasn't until I got to university that I took up contemporary and just, you know, fell in love with it, because it was this type of movement where it combined everything, and you could take from any form of dance and amalgamate it into a full expression.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. Much more expressive, whereas ballet and tap, it's technical.
Yes. And I mean, there's technique in contemporary as well.
Of course.
But with ballet and tap, you have a set syllabus. So you have set movements. Whereas with contemporary, okay, there are set syllabuses that you can follow, but it's more about coming from a concept or an idea rather than always coming from a syllabus, always coming from set movements. You know, that it can come from an idea rather than a movement. The movement can come from a different place.
Yeah, part of as someone who's completely ignorant, really, I just enjoy dance, but I'm quite ignorant about it. I always assumed it's my analogy is Picasso, where people think Picasso's expressionism was wild, and you know, ignorant people say anyone could splash paint like that. But then you look back, and he had all the technical things locked in, and he could do beautiful drawings and, you know, very traditional artistic figure drawing and stuff. He had all the technical stuff, and then he went to the expressive. So I assume, is dance the same way, where in order to really do the contemporary well, you actually need the foundation?
I don't think you necessarily do, but I would say that most really good contemporary dancers have a very strong grounding in probably ballet, at least, but not all. It's not absolutely essential. But the thing that ballet does is it gives you a really strong physique, which enables you to do anything else you want to do. I think now that contemporary can cover such a broad spectrum that it's not necessarily necessary to do ballet, for example. There are some amazing contemporary dancers who came across from hip hop, for example, or from street dance. So there's other ways of getting that core strength and that, you know, sort of core grounding in order to be able to, it's all still technique based, isn't it?
And discipline too, right? I know I've actually, oddly enough, this podcast, and it's not because I'm a dance fan, I keep meeting filmmakers who grew up as ballerinas and quite serious and followed it, you know, all through their lives, up through high school and going to conservatories for ballet, and the insane stories of how competitive and demanding it is. And it's funny. And then a lot of them move into comedy and then filmmaking. And I say, and one of the jokes around here in Los Angeles is, you know, the improv troops are super competitive. And I go, I guess that's not competitive at all compared to your ballet conservatory. They said, oh no, ballet prepared us for everything the world can throw at it. Nothing will ever be as painful and demanding as, I imagine, being an adolescent girl being told you have to be on point.
You want to be, though. That's the thing. You want to be on point, and it hurts a lot.
it's like someone, some, I'm sure there are academic essays or papers about that ballet is a form of sexist cruelty, right? Because
it is definitely. I find it very difficult now to watch traditional ballet. It does not appeal to me at all because of those sort of stereotypical archetypes of what men are and what women are and how they move. I think there's a lot more modern ballet which crosses those genres and questions those things. But yeah, really traditional ballet, it doesn't appeal to me anymore at all. I'm a total contemporary girl now because that's just, you know, real freedom of expression to me is key.
And so it was college that you shifted into contemporary?
Yeah, at university, I actually studied writing at university because I'm a writer as well. So that was my in at university. And then I don't know, I just ended up doing dance and then doing dance modules and then doing the dance course and suddenly getting back into it. It was I'd had a hiatus and then I got back into dance then. Like I said, it's been a little bit love and hate at times in my life. Finding the balance, I think it's coming back to what you were just talking about with the ballet dancers and that competitive world. And sometimes with dance, maybe with any art, it's hard to find the balance where you can flog yourself so hard that you stop loving it. And somehow you have to find that balance in gratitude of loving what you do, trying to make a living out of it. And balancing those two things up is really tough, I think. I hope I found that balance, but I think with any art, there's always that tendency to tip over into extreme. Maybe that's the nature of art, or it's what my experience of the nature of art is. So you have to keep sort of reining yourself back in and trying to find the balance point.
For sure. Well, especially someone like you who has multiple interests, and you just gave away writing, which hadn't been mentioned in your brief bio. So were you always a writer too? Were you always writing stories, or you were that kind of kid?
Yeah, from primary school. Yeah, always writing stories. And
that ended up being your focus at university.
Yes, it did. And I've carried on with that through. I mean, I've written several novels and they're not published yet. But yes, I'm a writer. I also love writing poetry. And so I think that reflects in my film that I wanted to combine, you know, with voice, that I wanted to combine words, spoken word with movement, because they're two of my passions.
Yeah, that actually is a beautiful, and you are one of the performers in the film. So that's actually a wonderful way to bring two sides of yourself together, I imagine.
Yeah. Plus the filmmaking. So, you know.
Plus filmmaking. Yeah. So voice truly brought. So tell me what I should be asking now. Should I be asking about the novels or the dance or the filmmaking? I guess I should. Did the filmmaking, you took a break as you focused on dance for a while and then it came back, you said, with as technology made it more film? Because, yeah, filmmaking used to be an almost unreachable. Until the equipment, there's sort of been the renaissance of digital filmmaking. It was still painfully expensive for a long time until the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, definitely. Everything was analog and it was difficult. I set up a company with my partner in the noughties, in the 2000s, and we made a film at the Welsh Parliament building, which was really good fun. And I worked with an editor then, actually one I'd met at university, and he's the editor on my film Voice. So I've worked with him all through the years. So this is going back, I don't know, 15, maybe more, maybe nearly 20 years. I made this film in Wales and we were doing actually some parkour as well as dance in and around the structures. And we'd had permission from someone in the parliament, and the police turned up and I had this bit of paper and we had our camera and they let us carry on. But yeah, we were leaping around. So that was a really interesting project for me because it combined parkour, dance. It was site specific. And also I got to use the editor for that. Oh, and I had some music for that one as well. So I had commissioned music for that. then after that, I didn't do anything for quite a long time. Then when we were in Mexico, I joined the dance company in Mexico. So during that time, I was one of the dancers in the company. So I wasn't leading my own stuff. I wasn't directing my own work. I think I made only one film during that time. But that's how I met the Mexican dancers who were in my film, because I worked with them in a Mexican dance company, Bajo Luz. And so, yeah, then once I came back to the UK and then everything with COVID hit, and then it was like, well, it's time to return to that love of filmmaking, because like everyone else, you know, is like, well, we can't get out and do any dancing. So, you know, we have to find other ways, innovative ways to keep expressing ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a writer and as someone who's all of your interests, and there's many of them, but they all relate to performance.
Yeah.
I guess, except for novels. I mean, I imagine a lot of novelists didn't even notice lockdown.
No, exactly. Yeah. Actually, I just finished a novel a few weeks back, and it took me I worked on it for 2 years. And so, yeah, basically through the whole of COVID, I was working on a novel, and yeah, maybe that was a good anchor as well during that time, because.
Yeah. So I realized I didn't ask you questions that like narrowed down where you lived. Like what part of the UK did you grow up in?
So I grew up in Devon, which is in the south, and that's where I am now as well. I always seem to sort of ping pong back here because it's beautiful and it feels like home, and part of me is always here. But then I spent so long living in Mexico, in the Yucatan, that part of me is always there as well. So it's, yeah, I'm sort of, yeah, I don't quite fit in either place, but I also feel at home in both. So it's that sort of strange thing when you've lived a long time out of your own country, that you get that strange sort of duality.
Right. So Exeter is a city in Devon.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's wonderful that you started a, well, Exeter Dance existed before the Exeter Dance Film Festival.
Yeah, well, actually, I run something called the Southwest Dance Hub, which is for professional dance artists in the southwest of the UK. I co-facilitate that with another dancer, and we set that up about a year ago now. So the idea for the festival grew from that, because each term we meet up with different with artists from different art forms. So we did a term on film, we did a term on art, we did a term on music. So it's a really great way to meet new artists and to collaborate with different artists. But also we've got this real sort of core of dance artists now who are all there and up for doing stuff together. So yeah, it's been a brilliant project. And we've got to do a couple of live performances, which after, you know, 2 years of no performance, I couldn't stop grinning. I was so happy to be on the stage again. I felt like I was back home, you know, under the lights. So yeah, and we did an amazing piece, a dance for camera piece, where we used a website through the phone, where the phone connects to the laptop and the laptop connects to the projector. So the images are projected onto the screen in live time. And I was filming one of the other dancers in the space, but also filming the audience. So it was like really interesting for the audience to have a live piece, but also have it filmed behind on the screen at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
And the Yucatan. Yeah. So that's for those who don't have, who haven't been to Cancun and whatnot, right? The Yucatan Peninsula is this amazingly beautiful area on the east side of Mexico, sort of central Mexico on the east facing the Gulf of Mexico, where it's honestly about as beautiful as the world gets.
Yeah. Definitely. It's a wonderful place and wonderful people. And the nature there is incredible. And I just, you know, I landed on my feet because I ended up in a small fishing village where there was a professional dance company. So I ended up dancing with them, you know, and made a lot of friends and learned so much. And what you were talking about earlier with discipline, with ballet, I really learned a new form of discipline through working with that company, because we did a lot of very athletic work using almost like scaffolding structures where we were doing suspension. So we were training 6 days a week, you know, every day out in the hot sun, we were training, and I loved it. I absolutely loved that side of it. I love the training. I love the discipline, and I keep that up even though I spend a lot of time here now, back in the UK, dancing by myself 3 days a week. I'm down at the studio training. So, and then the other days I train at home, but I make sure that I keep that up, and I enjoy that. So it's like my body's used to it now, I guess.
Yeah, there is, the physical demands are, if you let your body get used to not doing it, it must be incredibly difficult to get back in.
Yeah, and if, obviously as you get older, that becomes more true. I mean, when I was in my 30s, I was always thinking, oh, you know, one more year, and then I'll have to stop. And then it was like, now I'm in my 40s, and I'm like, well, why do I have to stop? My body's still able. It makes me incredibly happy. I'm going to be a total nightmare when I can't dance anymore. So I need to keep it going, because it's what makes me feel whole. So yeah, as long as my body keeps going, I'll keep going. And one way that I can take care of it is to keep the training going, and to try and keep in shape, so that, you know, to try and prevent injury, to stay strong, to stay flexible. And I enjoy it. When I stop enjoying it, I guess then that will be a new conversation to have with myself, but I'm still enjoying it.
Wonderful. And actually, that really does apply to everything we do, right? I mean, yeah, if you took too much time off of writing, it's, people think you can just sit down and write again, but it's right. All these things, even if it doesn't use muscles, it all takes training. It all takes devotion. If you turn your back on something, when you return to it, it takes a while to get back where you were.
It's true. And especially with writing, it's interesting, because I do sometimes take time off in between. I try not to put pressure on myself about the idea for the next project. And I have actually already got the idea for my next project, which is unusual, but it's like, what I've learned is that it's only about 10% writing, and then it's about 90% editing. And that's the part where you have to edit and edit and edit. And that's a whole other skill set that you learn as you go along. And yeah, that's the thing that I think you would lose if you didn't regularly do it. So yeah, that's been interesting, learning that.
For sure. So, and I actually was fascinated when you said how the dance company in Mexico is in a fishing village. You said it's in a small community is able to support, or when it comes time for performance, do they go to larger population centers or?
Yeah, we would, we do some performances in our community. I think the thing with Mexico is that I found was that the people on a whole have a higher regard or respect for artists than I found here in the UK. That if you say you're an artist there, then there's a respect there that they value what you do. Whereas if you tell someone in the UK, they don't necessarily think it's work, or, you know, they think that you're just like poor and scrounging, which might be true, but
I was gonna joke that, yeah, here when you say work, you're an artist, people hear unemployed. I think,
yeah,
if the exactly. UK has less respect for artists than Mexico,
yeah,
I don't know, I'm fairly certain that the USA has less respect for artists than the UK, because we look at the UK and we think they support their artists so well compared to
yeah.
us.
I think there is a lot of support, actually, especially for maybe musicians, that side. I think for dance in the last few years, we've been quite woefully sidelined in the UK. But I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, I think that in Mexico, I always felt that there was a lot of regard and a lot of respect for artists, and they would support performances. But also, yes, we would go and perform in Cancun or Playa del Carmen, or other places. We went and performed in Mexico City. The director of the company, who's one of the dancers in my piece, he's well regarded in Mexico and regularly got and gets full-time funding. So he's very successful, and he's an absolutely amazing choreographer. So yeah, if you ever get a chance to see his work, I would recommend it, because he's always been very innovative and has taught me a lot. He's been my mentor as well.
Yeah. I'm sure dance is everywhere. Every community, even if we don't know it, there are performances going on.
Yeah.
That's
It's
one of
fundamental, isn't it? It's fundamental to humans to dance, to move, you know, it's celebration, it's expression, it's mourning, it's whatever, you know, it's every form. It's very natural for us to express through our bodies and
Yeah, and I say this as a fan who has zero information or zero knowledge, but it's pre-verbal, right? We were dancing
Exactly.
around campfires when we didn't have the written word. We had language,
Exactly.
obviously, but it's a
And
primal language for
it
humans.
is. And then, you know, the rhythm of the heartbeat is the first rhythm. It's in us all the time, our whole lives. And so it's natural for us to. And from what you were saying at the start about how you're not a dancer and but you love tennis, you see, now I've got it in my mind. I want to choreograph a tennis piece for you to prove that you can move.
I do. I feel beautiful. I feel beautiful when I move around the
Good.
tennis court because it's the one thing that I learned at a young age. At a young
Yeah.
age. By the way, when you were talking about keeping your body in shape, there's a brace on my knee right now
No.
because I am now. I took a little too much time off of tennis and then I got back into it this year, and my body said, "Who the fuck do you think you are?"
Yeah.
So I
Which is
have
why you
almost
have to
constant
stay
pain.
strong. Oh no.
Yeah,
Oh.
but it's worth it. It's worth it. I just, but and I imagine, all right, well now this is a very leading question and just personal, but for me, because my body knows what to do on the tennis court, I actually sort of enter like a meditative state on there and I just sort of relax and I focus on, in that case, the ball. But when you dance, is it sort of a beautiful almost mental exercise of relaxing your mind and not thinking about what's going on in life and just focusing on the movement?
There's so much thinking that goes on in dance. So much thinking. But yeah, it's not everyday thought. Yeah,
Right.
you
You focus
definitely.
on what you need
Yeah.
to because it's so physically demanding and so precise. My God, I mean, the precision of, yeah.
I love that. You're thinking about all the different parts of your body and what they need to be done. Obviously, some of it becomes automatic as if you do things enough. But you're counting. You know, you're making sure you know what's coming next, or if you're creating, then you're thinking about that. And yeah, you're concentrating on your alignment, your posture, where everything is, every part of your body. It's so funny. Sometimes it does make me laugh when if I'm teaching and I'm trying to say to the students, you know, all the things they need to think about, and it's overwhelming. It can be overwhelming, but it's also quite thrilling as well. And it does give you that space outside of other parts of life that where you're literally present and you're just there fully embodied. Yeah, it's a gift for sure.
It is it and it's yeah there's no it's I don't know it just like I tried to throw shade at the people who think that expressionistic art is simple and they think they can do a Jackson Pollock if they just splash paint around but yeah with dance I mean just sticking certain limbs in the right way just try to do it once if you're not that's how I know I'm not a dancer because I think I, tried to. Well, we took the kid to a dance studio, and I was watching just the basic stuff, and I was like, "Yeah, boy, and like you mentioned, hip hop dance deserves a lot of credit for being demanding and just as precise. It's not at all. It's a highly evolved art."
Definitely. I love hip hop. I gave up ballet when I was 13 and I got really into hip hop, and that's what I was did all the time. I just loved it. And yeah, I was never very good at it, but I loved it. I love yeah. So I've yeah, a lot of time for all dance forms, really. I love it all because as a contemporary dancer, we're little magpies, you know, we take from everything that we see. We're like, oh, I like that, I like that, I like that, and absorb it into what we're doing. So yeah, we're the magpies of the dance world.
Yeah, that must be really rewarding to be able, because obviously it's an art form where you can pull from multiple genres. And as a guest curator for Edif, I was, of course, you know, the different styles of dance. You know, obviously there were some films that really stood out to me, but yeah, when people incorporate dance into riding the back of a garbage truck, and you see movements that look very, you know, angry, like physical anger, but in such a precise way that multiple, you know, there's one thing if someone's acting angry, but if you go from one person to three to seven and they're moving in a coordinated way that expresses anger, it's just, you know, you can't do that with words.
No, and there's something about, because you feel anger in your body, so to then find ways to physically and cathartically express that, I think, yeah, is this where it comes from? So you're using the original vessel. And I'm very interested in a dance and emotion. And I think from working with the company in Mexico, that's really been an inspiration for me. And it's a lot of what leads the work I do. Like the next piece I'm working on is about loss. And so I'm very interested in exploring those emotions, which are very difficult. And for the dancers that I'm working with, I think it's going to be quite challenging, but it's a cathartic process. And I think that's true with my film Voice as well, that the dancers, quite a few of them said afterwards that they found it very cathartic to speak, but then also to re-embody those words and to take it back to source and to work through those feelings and that expression.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I certainly hope. Well, so is it going to lead to more and more films? How many should I be asking? Like, have you been directing dance films for a while now? And Voice is just the first I was lucky enough to see.
I've made other films, but I would say, yeah, Voice was the first major film. I've made a film since then, but it was a shorter film with just me dancing in it and a friend who's also a videographer filming it. And then I made some music for it, actually. I'm not a musician, but I did make some music for it. And I really enjoyed that. That was using sculptures in a sculpture garden. So I always like to collaborate with other art forms. But yeah, I think the new piece about loss, that will be one that I'm more sort of seriously directing with a group of people. I've got a filmmaker interested in helping to film that as well.
Right. So you're creating it as a dance piece, but you have ideas to film it.
It will be a live piece, but there will also be a film. So I'm not really sure yet how it's all going to fit together, but there will be live and film elements. It won't be a film of the live piece. It will be a separate film.
Yeah. Right. The film will not. Right. Right. So whatever the piece is, then you take it off the stage and put it somewhere else for filming.
It will. It's okay. It's like during the creative process, as we work through the ideas, there will be parts that we film that will then later be taken away to be made into a film. And there'll be parts of the process that become part of the live piece. So I've also got some locations that I really want to film in. So, yeah.
it really does make you a producer, and not just a film producer. It's there's so many different words to use it. Choreographer, producer, filmmaker, dancer. There's so many. I guess I feel like asking, is it just like you just do, and you're teaching too, but you do.
Yeah. We call it facilitating more than teaching, because I do teach. I mean, I have taught a lot over the years, but at the moment I'm not specifically teaching a class. I do miss it a little bit, but I like to teach adults. I like to teach dancers. But yeah, I co-facilitate at the moment. So I lead tasks rather than teaching technique. And then often those tasks will lead into something else and ideas develop. But I refer to myself as a dance artist. I feel like that sort of covers a lot of the basis. of what I do. And it also gives me a lot of freedom. You know, if I come up with an idea, I can just do it. And now with the Dance Hub, I get to collaborate with more and more people and share ideas, and it becomes this real sort of melting pot of inspiration.
Right. And with the Dance Hub, I guess I want to ask, what is the part of the decision of making like a new piece? Because obviously you can, I guess one of the, it's almost like writing, I'm thinking of it in terms like, you know, if you're a playwright, you can always resurrect an old one and perform it, right? So, but is it like, did you experience a loss and you said it's time to make a piece about loss, or what leads you to decide to create a new piece? Versus performing things from your past or things you've seen elsewhere, right? Because you can always, I assume dance is something where, like a play where if you, you know,
It's called repertoire. So if you're
in a repertoire, company, that's the word.
So is it the same in in dance companies they have repertoire, but as a dance artist, because I'm independent, we don't tend to resurrect stuff we've done before. We tend to keep moving forwards and doing new things. It might be if there's a performance showcase coming up, you might want to take something that you've done before. So the lost piece came from I lost a friend about 18 months ago now. Gosh, no, it's been 2 years now. And I was interested in the process of loss. And I think it's something that, obviously, it's something that affects everybody. So I interviewed his long-term partner, and I asked her a series of questions about going through that. And she's a good friend of mine, so she's someone I felt able to approach, because obviously it's a very sensitive thing. And then I took the sound recording and sort of tweaked it and mixed it up. And then I danced to her words. So it was quite different to voice, where I was dancing to my own words. I danced to her words, which, yeah, it was interesting, because I felt a degree of responsibility to look after her, what her expression was. I performed that live. It was only a short piece. I performed that live earlier this year. And then it just sort of went on the back burner. And so then during the Dance Hub sessions, I came up with a few more ideas. I tried them out on some bodies. And now as a part of the Exeter Fringe Festival, we have a space for a week. So during that week, I'm going to develop the piece. And I got talking to a filmmaker and she wants to be involved. So yeah, it's very fluid. I think probably the best way to say it. It's very fluid. You never know what's going to inspire you, do you? You know, as an artist, you never know where the inspiration might strike. And I try very hard to be open and to, you know, to just be ready for anything that comes, and to make notes. And if something pops into my head, I'll just make a quick note on my phone or write something on the computer. And then I might come back to it. I might not. It depends how deep rooted the inspiration goes. But yeah, this idea has definitely stuck with me. So but yeah, working with voice again, because I think that worked so well for the piece I made before. And the thing I like about working with voice and dance is that it's more accessible to a wider audience, whereas just dance pieces, I think sometimes they can alienate an audience or make an audience feel intimidated if they don't feel like they understand the language of the movement. And so I think dance and words together gives access to more people.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I think this lost piece will slay me.
It's going to slay me first.
I had a significant loss at the beginning of COVID. One of my closest, longest friends, and his widow and I are still close. So I imagine, when you lose someone close, who's your contemporary, it's a very different thing.
Yeah.
We've grown up in an era where, other generations, the wars were worse. And loss was a lot more common, right? Like
that's a good point.
Half the people you went to school with would go off to war or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, as someone born in the 60s, I was born in the late 60s. So pretty much no one I grew up with, you know, America only jumped into one war in my prime years. And it was an easy one that like took a couple days. So yeah. I don't mean to laugh about it, but yeah, I understand why you were. I was going to say I'm a little envious that you have used it for art, because I really just sat on my loss. I didn't work through it as much as there was just too many other things to deal with in life.
But I think, you know, you still can. It's never too late to work through loss, because it's not something that goes away. So you can always find a way to work through it that works for you. And I think it starts with talking about it and, answering questions about it and, asking yourself where you sit with it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that sounds wonderful. Okay, so I guess I should shift gears and ask what inspired you. Was it just the fact that you've been combining your interests in film and writing and dance so much that it just made sense to start a film festival around dance?
Well, last year was my first year on the film festival circuit. I put my film voice out there and was able to go, luckily enough, to go to two film festivals in the UK, and obviously be involved with your festival. No, I went to three festivals actually over the last year and a half. So I just loved it. I loved going. I love meeting the other filmmakers. I love seeing all the films. I mean, amazing. And, you know, the creation of Sherman Oaks and watching all the films online, it just blew me away. I just loved it. And I realized that, you know, it was a real passion for me. And there just wasn't anything. I mean, it's quite niche, I guess you could say, a dance film festival, although the amount of films I've had submitted, it's definitely not that niche. So yeah, there was a need for it, I think, in this area. And it just sort of came out of that. I just thought, well, I'll just do it. I'll just have a go. And, you know, Film Freeway makes things quite easy to just set it up. And so it came literally from being as a part of the film festival circuit as a filmmaker and loving it and wanting to bring that home really to my area. And so, yeah, I'm trying to take it one step at a time, because that's the only thing you can do when you're trying something new for the first time. And so far, there's just the response has been incredible, and the films that have been submitted have blown me away. And as a filmmaker myself, it's inspiring and given me lots of new ideas for things I can make as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I can say, I mean, your first year, you got more films submitted than Sherman Oaks Film Festival did its first year. I think you doubled us.
Wow. You know, and that's just our dance film.
Because we started small. And you got so many wonderful submissions.
I wonder, I think it's because of, I think in the last few years, it's really blossomed, short films, indie films. I think it's really blossomed with maybe from being in lockdown, more people are using that, the genre. And I would say it's probably because of that. It's cheaper, isn't it, to make really good quality films. You can do it on a small budget. So
that's true. And I imagine it certainly could have been helpful to have a niche like dance, because like when our film festival was launched, we were just like, we'll take anything. We love all genres, mm-hmm. all types of things. And so I know a lot of people, it was when we started adding categories, like I added the art house experimental category, and all of a sudden we got all these wonderful films that hadn't bothered before, because they thought, well, I don't want to have to compete with all the, standard dramas.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I got more experimental submissions than general submissions. For sure. And I guess for dance filmmakers, that's what they will put in for their search. So yeah, it's going to be a smaller field of film festivals that come up, isn't it, when they search?
Yeah, exactly. And I think people just like to know that their genre is appreciated.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. And it's the event we're talking in at the near the end of September, and the actual film festival will be in mid-October.
Yeah, 15th to the 23rd of October. So it's rapidly approaching now.
Yeah, so actually nearly a full week.
Yes. So yeah, one day for the in-person event and then a whole week online.
Online, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And has it taken up more time than you expected? Are you did it kill your productivity elsewhere?
I would say now it is really taking up a lot of time. Luckily, I was able to get my book finished just before, and I really wanted to get my book finished before everything got really full on, you know, having to contact all the filmmakers and download all the files and get ready for the space and, you know, curating the program, all those things. So it's been my main focus, but I'm also still running the Dance Hub. But it's quite nice because it means I'm not on the computer all day long. Then at least I get to still go out and be in my body, which is important.
Yeah. Did I not adequately ask about the Dance Hub? Does it deserve a more thorough explanation?
Oh no, I think we've talked about it.
Okay,
quite a
good,
bit.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well then I guess I'm gonna shift you into talking about the fact that EDIF, that Exeter Dance International Film Festival, because you invited me to be a guest curator, and you obviously threw me in the section that I would enjoy most. although I don't remember what the title was, but it was
Best Concept.
Yes, Best Concept. So I got to see the high concept stuff.
Yes,
which was just absolutely beautiful films. And so I sent you an email saying these were so wonderful. You know, maybe we should do a season of the Discovery Indie Film TV series devoted solely to dance film.
Yes.
And you said yes. So now you will be the guest curator or the guest series producer of a season of this Discovery Indie Film TV series that this very podcast gave birth to it, for those who don't know.
Super excited. It's really thrilling to be able to promote dance films and to share these amazing dance films with a wider audience, for sure.
For sure, yeah. And we'll figure out the best way to do it. But I imagine there's nothing like it out there. Not that I have searched the streaming services for dance film, but I think the kind of films that you got, I don't know if the public even knows they exist.
No, and they need to know. They need to know because I think generally what they might see, most people might get to see on the TV are high budget, you know, very polished, very sort of specific genre films. Whereas these films are not, actually I did get some high budget films, but a lot of the films are not so high budget, although they're still super professional. But they don't necessarily have to fit so tightly into the genres, and they're super entertaining. I mean, yeah, that's a
point. Yeah, and film and television tends to have a dance number, and I'm doing the air quotes with my fingers. There will be a dance number that sometimes it's actually impressively artistic, but often it's just something. It's normally a salute to old Hollywood or something.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is actually beautiful. It is beautiful dance. I mean, no insults being thrown at the old dance numbers in Hollywood films. But yeah, dance in film very rarely embraces what you're talking about. And I mean, yeah, you even mentioned parkour at one point. you know, Lord knows the artistic elements in that never make it to the screen, right? If parkour appears in something, it's part of an action movie chase.
Yeah, except there was that film, what was it called? Something London, and they did one in Paris as well. The guy who originally set up parkour, he made a film. He made a feature-length film. Oh, I can't remember what it was called. And he went and it was basically him doing parkour in London. It's absolutely amazing. If you can get hold of that, I recommend it. And it's a full-length film.
Okay, you've given me some Googling to do. I'll find it because yes, I would love to watch that.
It's called Jump London, I think.
Oh, Jump London. Okay.
Yeah.
I apologize if people hear me typing, but I'm typing the words Jump London.
Yeah, I knew it was something
my
like
Jenny
that.
Pill notes. All right, well, it's all exciting. Is there anything we left out that you'd like to mention before we wrap it up?
I don't think so.
I know that's one of those ridiculous, unfair questions that's like, anything else you want to mention? I do stress to people, if we get the dance season of the Discovery Indie Film TV series, if it comes together before we release this podcast, and I think, probably in December, probably around December 9th, this will go out to the public. If it's available, I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Brilliant.
Show notes or the notes that come with the podcast, that whatever podcast, whatever app or however people come to hear this, it'll be a link down there because Lord knows it's going to be beautiful. And obviously I hope I don't have to persuade people that even if you don't think of yourself as a person who appreciates dance, these films will pull you in.
Definitely. I definitely have picked films that are accessible and that I believe that you can enjoy even if you're not a seasoned dance fan. I think that they hopefully will get some new people in, you know, to love dance film and to love dance.
Yeah, no, if anything, I feel inspired and in more ways than one. I'm like, maybe I should, after my knee heals.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's been a long term. I always said to myself, and this is I'm sure you don't look down on any type of dance, but I always thought, you know what, if I ever get to retire and I have time, I'm going to take ballroom classes and learn some grace.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you've learned steps from tennis, you learn, you know, you've got a lot of the sideways movement, you move sideways. Yeah, you could definitely, that would be a good one. But I hope you're doing some physio exercises for your knee regularly every day.
I was told to take 3 weeks off. I actually saw I got x-rays and today's Thursday. I on Tuesday, I saw the doctor and thankfully he told me there's no actual damage. I think it's actually arthritis of some osteoarthritis or so allegedly if I take 3 weeks off, I might be in good enough shape to be physical again.
Okay.
And if I still have pain, he's going to give me a cortisone shot. And he's like, do you want just a cortisone shot today? And I was like, I don't know, a needle in my knee. Maybe I'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'd already taken 1 week off and it got a little better, but I know it's.
But yeah, you've got to keep the muscles strong. That's, you know, once you've had your rest, then you build up the muscles.
And the joints lubricated. People don't realize that our joints, not using them, then when you use them again, they don't like it. Yeah. So use me. I hope everyone uses me as a cautionary tale. don't let yourself turn away from your body for several years because your body will not be there when you ask it to return.
No, it'll take gentle coaxing.
That was the real problem is I joined a tennis club and I said, I'm only going to play once a week for a month and then twice a week. I had in my mind, I knew I had to do the slow scale up.
Yeah.
And I got sucked in. I got invited to play another thing and another. And then all of a sudden I was playing like four times a week and then I could barely get into bed at night because my knee wouldn't bend. And I was like, oh my God, ice wasn't helping. So anyway, we didn't need to talk about my bad
knee. Well, that's what dancers, we're always talking about our injuries and how to heal them and what to do. It's
Well, and I will take that as one more piece of inspiration that if dancers can get injured and come back, I can certainly get back on that.
We're always injured. I couldn't. You couldn't talk to a dancer and them not have an injury that they're just getting over or nursing as they go. So it's
for sure. Yeah. It's a part of life. It's like elder speak. I remember when I was at university and I took a communications course. They talked about elder that when you reach a certain age, you have conversations about illness and death. Elder speak. So you don't have the dead, but you have everyone's talking about injury and pain because it's just a part of your lives. And when you're with another dancer, you have someone you can discuss that with.
Exactly. Yeah.
In fact, when I showed up at a tennis match the Saturday before the pain was too much for me, another guy looked at the brace on my knee and said, "My knee's killing me. Does that help?"
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, we need, human beings really do need to communicate over things. Isolation is bad. Yeah. So that's why I'm happy for you and all the wonderful things you're doing from the hub to the festival to creating new stuff and choreographing. And I will make a verbal promise if you, and this is recorded, if you choreograph something tennis-like, I promise to do my best to do it. The one thing I can't do is do it at the film festival, although there is a stage, but I wouldn't want the crowd to be like, did he just do that? We're going to walk out.
It's dancing. What is this?
Here for movies.
It might be a new fad, you know, it might start a new craze.
Yeah. Actually, if I was truly entrepreneurial, I'd be like, I would try to find a dance film festival here in LA and start attending because it has to exist in a city of millions.
Yeah. You'd think.
Yeah. There's for sure.
Experimental. Is it experimental? They're called. That's a film festival. I think they do a dance. I think that's in LA. Yeah.
See, that's, those are at the very least I should be attending as a fan.
Yeah. Do it.
Lord knows if I walk up to the programmer and say, "Hey, I program a festival too," that there tends to be then you lock eyes and there's a thought of like, well, what, you think you're better than me? What are you? That's sadly, I think we're too close to Hollywood for people to just collaborate. But I don't know. I'm revealing too much. All right. So do you want to share any websites or anything?
My website is ediff.co.uk. That's ediff.co.uk. And then I'm also on Instagram at edfilmfest, edifilmfest, that is. And Facebook, you can find me on Facebook as well, Exeter Dance International Film Festival.
Excellent. All right. And those will, like I said, those will be in the show notes as well for this podcast. And now I will ramble on my closing little spiel, which is...
Hey, Jeff, are you going to ask me about my favorite films?
Yes. Oh, did I not make it clear? We'll stop recording. And then that's a separate podcast. That'll be the podcast after this one.
I see.
So we do one that's all about you. Yeah, the interview is separate from the when the first person came in for episode one of this podcast, I said, you know, we'll probably talk for 30, 40 minutes and then we'll do the four questions. And the dude went on for like an hour and a half. And then the four questions took a half hour. And I was like, I can't ask people to listen to 2 hours all at once. So I split up the four questions from the interview. That's sort of been a nice thing, right? So that some people listen to all interviews, some people listen to interviews and four questions. And then there are people I can tell looking at the numbers that just go from four questions looking for film recommendations. So,
okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
So yes, I appreciate that you brought it up.
Yeah. On the note of someone rambling on for that long, I've got a friend who... He's an avid podcast listener and he listens to them at 1.5 speed so that he can listen to more.
That is. So I know I often, I once accidentally got to 1.5 and I realized, wow, you can listen to everything in that way. Yeah. Well, hopefully he'll listen to this one.
I hope so. I'm going to share it with him.
Yeah. All right. Well, wonderful. And we will. And for those who just heard that, yes. This one, I believe, what did I tell you? I think this one is going to be number 326 on December 9th. And 3 days, I believe that's a Friday. And then the following Monday, Jenny Pill's answers to the four questions will come out. And I'll just let you know the four questions are three favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. So it's a fun way to just talk about movies. And I always had a dream when there were fewer podcast episodes, we actually did all meet at a Mexican restaurant here in LA, and all the people who'd done the podcast met each other and had conversations. And I was actually able to point to people and go, all right, so he had The Dark Knight in his top three. You had The Dark Knight as your overrated. Maybe you two should discuss this.
Do they come to blows?
No, it's fun. There was a funny thing at that meet and greet, which was people somehow subdivided among short filmmakers and feature filmmakers. The people who made features ended up sitting around a table drinking margaritas, and all the shorts people were over here. And I was like, was this self-selective? Was it like, it blew me away.
Yeah.
And amusingly, since we're talking about the arts, it was at a Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles called Frida's, and there's pictures of Frida Kahlo everywhere. So,
anyway. Brilliant Frida.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and you have connections to Mexico. So
yes.
If you're ever in Los Angeles, we'll throw together a mixer of filmmakers.
Definitely. That'd be amazing.
All right. Well, my closing spiel will be, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Listen to it at 1.5 so you can listen to even more. Heck, if you can pay attention, do it at double speed, twice as fast. But if you want, so please like and subscribe. And please go to Amazon Prime Video, hopefully on a large television set. Don't use your phone to watch films, especially dance films. But hopefully you'll be able to see the season 7 that will have Jenny Pill's film voice in it, but also the Edith season, which will be all dance films. So you can just go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film, and discover these wonderful shows. They do cost money now. They used to be included with Prime, but Prime said, too many people are watching. We'd rather you charge. But for just $7.99, you get 20 to 30 films to watch, and you're supporting independent filmmakers who make stuff pretty much out of their own pockets. So I say it's $8 well spent. And I don't know the conversion, but it is always available in the UK. Don't know how many pounds. And if people want to learn more about this podcast or and please give the TV series 5 stars. And by the way, every season gets rated separately. I always thought that was weird. Like, reviews for season 1 don't apply to season 6. So season 6. So anyway, watch everything and review everything. Give everything 5 stars. Be kind. And go to discoverindiefilm.com if you want to learn more. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And we talked about how Jenny's film Voice was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year in 2021. We hold that festival every November. So if you want to learn more, go to ShermanOaksFF.com. And it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And finally, there is a second festival, which is Film Invasion Los Angeles. We hold that every June. And you can learn more at filminvasionla.com. And it's at filminvasionla on social media. And we're done. And if you live anywhere in Europe or the UK, you should go to Exeter on October 15th, which is, think of it as my birthday present. My birthday's October 17th. So October 15th, go to Exeter and attend the screenings in person and see just amazing dance films.
Yes.
Jenny Pill, thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening.